Thanks for tuning in to the Becker's Dental and DSO Review podcast. This episode shares some of the insights explored at Becker's Dental and DSO Review virtual event during the session Oral Health, Reclaiming Dentist's Place in Healthcare, sponsored by QSI Dental. You can view this session, access more podcasts, and find other great resources on our website, beckershospitalreview.com. Thanks for listening.
Good morning and welcome to the Becker's Dental and DSO virtual event. We are so excited to have you join us for today's workshop, Oral Health, Reclaiming Dentist's Place in Healthcare. I'm Gabrielle Mason with Becker's Hospital Review and I will be your moderator. It's my pleasure to start today's program by introducing our presenters. With us today is Dr. Susan Estep, the owner and chief smile officer of InTown Smile Studio. Dr. Estep spends her career investing to become an expert in cosmetic dentistry, in addition to providing general and family dentistry, including children's dentistry. We also have Dr. Whit Wilkerson, the owner and practicing dentist at DuPont and Wilkerson Dentistry. His work emphasizes restorative dentistry and complex problem solving. Finally, we're joined
by Carlos Vallecio, the regional manager of QSI Dental.
Carlos has more than 25 years in the dental industry, working in clinical, operational, and IT leadership capacities. Now I'm pleased to turn the floor over to Carlos to begin today's presentation.
Thank you, Gabby. Dr. Estep, Dr. Wilkerson, thank you so much for joining. Before we get into the meat of things, I'm just going to go over the agenda for today. We'll first start with introductions. We're going to then move on to current oral healthcare environment. Then we're going to talk specifically about what I believe is one of the most important things in dentistry today, which is oral health and systemic health connection. We'll migrate over to detection and treatment of those systemic conditions. And then, of course, how the dentist and DSOs can compensate from doing these services and also collaborate with the medical community to do so. Dr. Estep, very excited that you're here. And as they mentioned earlier, you're the current president of the American Association of Oral and Systemic Health, as well as the SMILE, what was that? SMILE officer? Chief SMILE officer?
CSO.
CSO, that's great, I love it. What made you decide to be a founding member of AOSH?
Thanks, Carlos, and thanks so much for having us here. So when the founding father of AOSH gave out a call to like-minded dentists, his name is Dr. Chris Kammer, and he had the idea that just over 10 years ago that there was an understanding in the dental community that the role of your oral health is significant in your total health and well-being. We were starting to understand more about the role that chronic systemic inflammation plays on chronic disease, and the fact that way back then, it was really just we were focused on periodontal disease and the inflammation of the gums that was playing a vital role in either exacerbating these conditions like cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, a lot of cancers and other inflammatory diseases. And that was really where it all started. So Dr. Kammer invited a group of us together to form this academy. And here we are, we passed our 10th birthday and we're growing, bigger and stronger than ever before. Certainly at times like today, the importance of total health has a whole new meaning.
Absolutely. I'm assuming that's where you met Dr. Wilkerson?
Yes, well, I've known Dr. Wilkerson for a really long time. He wouldn't tell you this, but he's kind of a famous dentist. So I'll share that when AOSH was a very young organization and we were just trying to gain some momentum, we were at our second scientific session in Cleveland. And I looked over my shoulder and I knew things were getting really good because Dr. Wilkerson was in the audience. And we later twisted his arm to join our board of directors and then lead us as president. And under his leadership, we've seen really tremendous growth in what we're trying to do in our mission.
That's great. That's great. Dr. Wilkerson, welcome. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Carla. It's good to be with you.
Absolutely. So what can you tell us a little bit about AOSH? And I know that you authored the book, The Shift. Maybe talk a little bit about both of those and how the book came to be.
Sure. Thank you. The American Academy for Oral Systemic Health, as Susan mentioned, was formed about 10 years ago. My first exposure was 9 years ago when we had a meeting at the Cleveland Clinic, and the presenters there were the researchers and physicians that ran the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute. And the thing that most impacted me, Carlos, was we had very well-known MDs, PhDs, researchers for years and years that you would think would be very mainstream medicine, and indeed that was their training, but what they were discovering was that there was more than just the genetic connection to health. It wasn't just dependent on your parents or your background, what would determine your future health. And so as they began to study about the environment and those environmental factors like lifestyle, what you eat, what you do, exposure to toxins, stress, et cetera, sleep quality, that these are very important factors to overall health. What they began to do is to tie together for us how oral health is really a central focus on complete health and how dentists and dental teams should be on the front lines fighting the health crisis that's destroying our nation. And so when I heard that, I was all aboard. And thankfully, through Susan's influence and others there, I was able to become more involved. And so over the last 9 years, I've just studied as much as I can to learn about the connection between oral health and complete health. And that led to, you know, the writing of this book, which really is about a paradigm shift in dentistry from thinking of ourselves as just working on teeth and only being focused on what's going on in the mouth, rather than seeing the mouth as a portal to the whole body, and that there are many things that we see going on in the mouth or starting in the mouth that are very important to complete health. And so this book is really about that. It's what is that shift? What is this dramatic movement that is going to be the next frontier in dentistry, which is being specialist in the medical field, not separate from medicine. The head and the mouth and the neck and the body are all connected. And so that's what we wanted to understand and take a big role in being part of the solution.
So, you know, sometimes things are obvious or just not obvious until, you know, somebody tells you. And somebody told me once, everything that goes into the body goes in through the mouth. And that just, for me, just made so much sense about oral health as related to systemic health. I'll open this question to either one of you. Why is integrative dental medicine especially important today?
I'll toss that to Whit because I believe that he coined the term integrative dental medicine.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, integrative medicine is really what we saw going on at the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute, where we saw physicians, PhD researchers, seeing how looking at all aspects of health, and there are integrative medicine centers all around the United States at the Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, Duke University, throughout the country, University of Arizona, Stanford, have integrative centers where they're looking at patients who may have illnesses such as cancers and saying, well, what difference does diet have to do with treating cancer? How about stress? How about, you know, just the internal things that are going on spiritually, looking at all factors of health and how they can relate to disease or preventing disease. So integrative dental medicine is really about piggybacking on a movement that's happening in medicine and saying we want dentistry to be part of that movement.
That's great. That's great. I have a follow-up question for you. If you were writing The Shift today, what would you include in the chapter related to the COVID pandemic?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say that COVID-19 has created a crisis that has dramatically changed our world and also our profession, because we know that this virus can stimulate respiratory distress interactions with the body's immune system and also create inflammatory responses. So as we're all learning about, it has the potential for fatal outcomes, especially for those that are immune compromised. So those with elevated levels of pre-existing systemic inflammation like diabetics, people with respiratory disease, atherosclerosis, obesity, liver disease, kidney disease, autoimmune diseases, arthritis, sleep apnea, and I could go on. So with that, our whole society is really concerned about staying healthy in a viral world. And so both during this pandemic and also for the future. So what that does for us in dentistry is raises the question, should we just be wearing more personal protection equipment and social distancing and increasing our sterilization precautions at this time, or does this affect our profession? And so the challenge that would come out of that is that I believe this pandemic should stimulate all dental professionals and all health professionals to take a hard look at how we fit into the total health model of those we serve as our patients. So as dentists, I see us as gatekeepers of systemic inflammation, and that's a role that we can take and be very involved in solving the problem.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I first got my start in the dental industry, it was in the Navy, and the dental department worked side by side with the medical to the extent of casualty care and doing triage and all kinds of different things, and we were trained together. And that's always been a pet peeve of mine, that in the civilian sector, there's this very tall wall and this very big gap between dentistry and medicine. And I'm excited to see that wall come down and the gap be reduced, or maybe even some bridges strung across there. I know that you coined the term gatekeepers of systemic inflammation, but I want to pitch that over to Dr. Estep. I want you to tell us a little bit about what that means to you. But before that, you shared an article with us that you, I think it came out today or in the last couple of days, about COVID and its relationship to patients with periodontitis.
Yes. Yeah, so on August 10th in Dentistry Today, the article suggests that COVID-19 patients who have periodontitis have increased risk of dying. So, to gum disease being another comorbidity in this pandemic and probably future pandemics that we're going to experience now that this is happening. So if that alone doesn't involve our profession much more now, then certainly as we talk about the role that periodontitis plays in systemic inflammation, that points to all the other comorbidities, almost to an exponential degree, our profession is being called to join with the medical providers to start to manage this pandemic and be leaders in better outcomes.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, absolutely. So I'm assuming that was your response to what the gatekeepers of systemic inflammation also means to you.
Yes,
that was a nice wrap up of both. Yes.
Yeah, so to expand on that, there are thousands of articles now that suggest and even point to causal relationships in gum disease and other cardiovascular disease, pregnancy outcomes, infertility, cancers, other inflammatory diseases, and what the evidence boils down to is the common denominator in this is inflammation. And so in gum disease, starting with gingivitis, there's inflammation in the mouth, and it's not just localized there, right? So if the inflammatory markers are turned on in the body, they're turned on not just in the gums, they're turned on the entire system. And inflammation was designed to turn on, fix a problem, and then turn off. So you have a splinter in your finger, the inflammatory processes turn off. If there's a little infection there, it gets rid of the infection, the splinter's removed, and the inflammatory process is turned off. The problem with periodontal disease and other issues with oral health is that the chronic system, the inflammation is chronic. It doesn't have a chance to turn off until we have solved the problem or until the the problem has been healed. And so that turns into chronic systemic inflammation, which again is the root cause for almost all preventable disease.
Right. And the body has a way of dealing with periodontitis if the dentist or the patient does not. It just removes the tooth, which Correct. Is not something that we want to do in the dental industry and the oral health industry for patients, because that does nothing good for their systemic health, right? Your body, right. just like you said with the splinter, that chronic condition will eventually, one way or another, resolve the problem, or through death, because obviously it can escalate.
Right, and the amount of time that it takes to slowly extract those teeth will shave not just years, but decades off of the patient's life because of the systemic implications right. from that inflammation.
No, that's great. So I'm gonna move on to, what are the key areas dentists can be focused on to improve systemic health? And Dr. Wilkerson, I'll pass it over to you. I know that there's some three key factors that you address.
Yeah, so well, what we're trying to find is what are the key common denominators that we can all learn together and address together. And so when it comes to systemic inflammation, Susan mentioned that probably the first thing that we would all think of is oral bacteria that are damaging, but we know now not only damaging locally and even just stimulating inflammation, but also the fact that they can literally get into your bloodstream, these bad bacteria, these damaging, harmful, dangerous, high-risk bacteria, and can harbor under the lining of your arteries, can be part of the stimulation for forming plaque in the arteries, can be found in blood clots of heart attack victims, oral bacteria, can get through the placenta into children and pregnant women that have high-risk pathogens that get from their gum tissues into their bloodstream or from abscess-infected teeth. So when you have an abscess tooth, like the type that needs a root canal, we'll say, because there's infection at the bottom of the root, that can get into your bloodstream too and be extremely dangerous. So there's a very high correlation between oral bacteria getting into the bloodstream and damaging the whole vascular network throughout your whole body and the organs that are attached to those vascular networks. And so it is a very big deal. This isn't a mouse. This is an elephant. And it's something that is very important. Bradley Bale, who is a well-known cardiovascular specialist who wrote the book entitled Beat the Heart Attack Gene with his partner, Amy Doneen, has written that that oral health and periodontal and periapical disease is a big dog in the cardiovascular arena. And they actually do salivary testing for oral bacterial pathogens on every patient they see that they're treating for heart conditions as part of their diagnosis of risk factors.
Yeah, I want to talk about that detection and treatment in just a moment. But that inflation affects all different parts of the body, like Dr. Estep was saying, and you were just saying. Beyond hypertension, there's a lot of different issues with inflammation of the heart. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I know that there was also airways. I suffer from asthma. I have friends that have CPAP machines for sleep apnea. Can you address a little bit of that?
Sure. Are you talking to me or Susan?
Either way.
Go ahead, Dr. Wilkerson.
Okay, well, when it comes to airway, which is another thing that oral physicians a la dentists can address, is the fact that when you struggle with breathing, that can create a cascade effect of inflammation because of the response to that perception. Let me give you an example. So a small child has allergies in their nose, and they can't breathe well, they're stuffy, so they convert to breathing through their mouth. But the nose is the filtration system for all the particles that come through air into your body, just like the air conditioning filters in your air conditioning of your home. So now you're bypassing the filtration system because it's stuffy with allergies, and you're breathing through the mouth, and you're breathing all the dirty air into the back of your throat where the tonsils are, so now they become inflamed. and you have swollen tonsils. Now you're having trouble breathing through your nose and breathing through your mouth. Then when you sleep, if you're having a struggle of having an open airway, oxygen levels may drop to the point where in the brain's respiratory center, it's like alarms going off saying we're choking to death here. So the response is to release stress hormones from the adrenal glands next to the kidneys, such as cortisol and adrenaline we're all familiar with. And that causes your heart to race or to speed up in order to pump more blood to get more oxygen to the tissues. That can cause cardiac arrhythmias. That can cause all kinds of issues, even leading to insulin resistance and diabetes, which is like having shards of glass scraping the walls of your arteries all day. Right. And the cascade continues where you get into more and more issues. And so that can lead go back just to having trouble breathing because of allergies. And so in the mouth, we'll see changes because when you breathe through your mouth, your tongue posture is different and you end up with crowded teeth and underdeveloped jaws and things like that. And the tongue will be too big for the mouth and you'll see scalp edges to tongue and the soft palate will be halfway down the throat. And things like that that we can see just like this if we're looking for it. And we can quickly discover many, 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 many patients that have airway breathing sleep disorders that can lead not only to sleep apnea, but high levels of inflammation throughout the body that can be extremely dangerous.
Which is interesting because I've heard you before, and what you just described as far as the tongue being too big for the arch, a lot of people will just put people on sleep apnea machines, but don't treat the cause that maybe they need to expand the arch. So maybe even some braces or would help, you know, to relieve the problem. Instead, they just treat it by putting them on CPAP machine. One thing I wanted to say, because it just clicked when you said something, my son, when he was in second grade, was falling asleep in class. And so we took him to the doctor, and the doctor couldn't find anything wrong. So we went in to get an MRI of his brain because they thought he had a tumor. That was the first time that I cried so much out of fear that my son would die. And turns out it was allergies. So he had stuffed animals in his room that the same thing you were saying, he wasn't able to rest at night. And just simple allergy medication corrected the whole problem. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, that's a very important part, particularly for children that may have ADHD type symptoms. Struggling cognitively, struggling with still wetting the bed when, you know, you would hope they've outgrown that. Those are all signs of sympathetic, which is fight or flight response kind of overactivity that can completely destroy the quality of your life. So every child that has any kinds of signs of symptoms of fatigue, struggling at school, ADHD type symptoms, we should ask, could they have allergies? And they should be tested for that. And could they have problems sleeping? And they should be tested for that. And we're not sure exactly what the percentage of children that have ADHD type diagnoses really are airway, breathing, and sleep problems.
So I changed the slide to that detection. So what are some of the things that dentists can look for in their patients to help, you know, be those gatekeepers to not only see them for their teeth and the supporting structures, but really help them with their systemic health while they have them in their care?
So on the topic of airway in children, in the last 2 days, I've had two children who have extremely holistic and healthy home lifestyles, and the moms are coming in and the children have cavities and the moms are completely just perplexed about this. And so, you know, when you start to look and you follow down the path, they've got great home care, they're not doing sugar, you know, and you're walking down all the checklists of, you know, cavity disease, but acidity plays a big role in this too. So if you can't breathe at night when you're sleeping, a lot of times the, you know, it causes children to, and adults to grind their teeth as a reaction to try to pull that airway open. And so there's a big paradigm shift now in bruxism and tooth grinding as well. But also that negative pressure will pull some acid up from the stomach and the esophagus and start to soften the enamel and allow the gateway to open up for rampant decay. So that one of the first places that I look is to airway. And I just ask parents of these children, do you ever notice, do you ever watch them when they sleep? You know, do they sleep with their mouth open or their lips sealed? And sure enough, in both of these kids, it was
mouth open
most of the time, even though they are rarely stuffy nose. And so, you know, and then you just take a peek back past the tongue and you see, you know, tonsils this big. And you start to see clues like that, you know, and when patients, adults or parents of children start to ask us, you know, they kind of look at you like, well, why are we, okay, you're talking about the cavities, but now you're talking about breathing, you know, you're not a breathing doctor. And I just tell them, look, airway's a big issue right now. It's a very hot topic in medical science. And if airway is a problem, then if there's an obstruction, then it can show up as cavities and all kinds of other signs and symptoms. And all those signs and symptoms just about live in my zip code.
Right.
And so with the checklists that Witt has put together, it makes it really easy to walk through, you know, our zip code and see, just check signs and symptoms. And then those point to possibly root cause, which again is what you were discussing. Like, why just put them on a CPAP before we found out why can't they breathe instead of just forcing air into a person that can't breathe? Let's start to look for root causes.
Absolutely. I can only imagine as a parent, the value that you added to yourself by recognizing that in your patient, but their child, and potentially veering them off a path that could be significantly worse in the future.
So you're touching on something that I think is probably going to come later, which is, this is all great, but we also have to, this takes time, and we have to, you know, monetize this somehow. You know, right. We have to talk about, where does this help the health of the business itself? And that's what you're queuing into right now, because the next thing you know, you have the entire family, and they trust. When they have a problem, they trust that you, and they say yes to treatment.
Yes.
No, that's great. So Witt, I took some of your things from the past, and inflammation, oral infection, systemic health. The key to treatment there is eliminating caries, periodontal protocol, extractions when necessary. Can you talk a little bit about that? How do you treat infection and inflammation?
Sure. Well, this is really an exciting area, because it's very interesting how today we will have patients referred to us by physicians who are preparing to do surgeries, hip replacement, open heart surgeries, and they want to get dental clearance that there's nothing, you know, negative going on in the mouth that would inhibit the prognosis. So today, that means that we need to dig in and actually test to see specifically what bacteria that are dangerous may be at elevated levels. And we can do that through a simple salivary test. Takes literally 1 minute. We send that off to a lab. We get a report back. It shows the different 11 primary dangerous oral pathogens and what levels they are at. That leads us right into a plan of not only cleaning the teeth or root planing and curettage or doing debridements of certain types, but also now we're looking at, in some cases, doing 8 to 10 days of systemic antibiotics. We're looking at using specific rinses and trays with gels that will continually attack the bacteria that are residing around the teeth. And we're getting into a lot of more sophisticated non-surgical periodontal protocols that are very successful. And periodontal surgery now is being more limited for the specialty care of cases where there's no response to non-surgical perio, perhaps in an isolated or a few isolated areas in the mouth as opposed to the whole mouth just being, you know, something that we cut all the gums and try to shorten to reduce the pockets. And so we're much more proactive with a number of various therapies that we're implementing both in the office and at home therapies that are being extremely effective.
That's excellent. You know, my mother, I think, grew up in a time where dentistry was very different. And so she has some teeth that are missing. I don't know the story behind them, but she's had them missing probably most of my life, not all, but some of them. And when I started in dentistry about almost 30 years ago, there was the saying that you can keep your teeth for your lifetime. And that always struck with me. And it's something that I believe very strongly. And I think that nowadays, in understanding this relationship with systemic health, it goes beyond your teeth. It really is about having a good, healthy lifestyle as you age. So for a lifetime, you can be healthy. We talked a little bit about airway already and TMD. I'd like to move on to diabetes, because we haven't really talked about that a little bit. Sure. Can you talk a little bit about, Dr. Estep, do you want to take a swing at this, and then Dr. Wilkerson can back clean up?
Yes, so historically, and we've known this for quite some time, type 2 diabetes and periodontal disease are very closely tied together. In your fact sheet here, that 80% probably says something like 80% of patients with type 2 diabetes also have periodontal disease or uncontrolled periodontal disease. The two of those things are hand in hand, and we've known that for a long time. One of the pieces we talked about already was the inflammation. So in periodontal disease, you have inflammation that's out of control. And in type 2 diabetes, we have lack of insulin ability and blood sugar that's out of control. And so when the inflammatory process is chronic, it's turned on, it won't turn off, and there's a constant need for energy in the body to be dumped into the bloodstream so this inflammatory process can continue, and that energy is pulled from sugar. And so there's constant need for sugar coming, well, or from, you know, that's pulling into the bloodstream from the rest of the body. And so the blood sugar is constantly increasing because of the inflammatory process. So now if you have a person who has difficulty controlling blood sugar because the insulin doesn't work, now the blood sugar numbers are up and up and up and up and up. And so they take medicines to get the blood sugar down. But if the periodontal disease, if the inflammation in the mouth is not controlled, then there's really no possible way to get the blood sugar under control. And as
you're
we also
know, right?
Right. And so on the flip side of that is with type 2 diabetes, wound healing is not well. So if you have type 2 diabetes and you have some kind of a wound, you're not going to heal as quickly. So your healing process doesn't work so well. And if you think of gum disease as being a giant wound of your gums,
right.
If you have type 2 diabetes, your ability to heal from that is impaired. So the two of those things we've known for a long time go hand in hand. And one of the simple things we can do in the dentistry office is to screen for A1C, which a lot of our colleagues do regularly, just like we take blood pressure and do oral cancer screenings. It's a really simple way that we can help to be a part of patients' health in that way. And then I'll toss the ball over to Whit to maybe sort of heighten this conversation to go from where we used to be. We just knew that diabetes and gum disease went together to, you know, how much more specialized we've become in that now.
Yeah.
So one thing right before Dr. Whit, before you take over, but just something interesting that you said that really caught me is 80% of patients with type 2 diabetes have periodontal disease. And based on what you just described, I wonder how many started maybe with gingivitis. Something not as severe, but because they couldn't heal properly, it just immediately progressed because they weren't able to fight it. And that's where it's at that stage.
So certainly chronic systemic inflammation is one of the root causes that leads to insulin resistance. And then that, if it's undetected, which is often goes undetected, widely undetected, that insulin resistance is pre-diabetes, which then turns into type 2 diabetes.
Interesting. So Dr. Wick?
Well, what's going on in the bloodstream is extremely important to what's going on in the mouth and the health of the periodontal tissues. Really interesting study I'll tell you about real quickly was there's a researcher who's also the dean at the University of Manitoba in Canada, and he did a study where they actually took dental students that had healthy gums, no bleeding on probing or brushing, no inflammation, and they got them to agree, as only you could with dental students, to eat a gallon of ice cream every day for 7 days. At the end of 7 days of eating this high, rich diet of fats and sugars that were all refined, they all had swollen and inflamed and bleeding gums. So if you don't think diet and diabetes and
sugar levels,
what's going on in the bloodstream affects the mouth, it does. So doing the hemoglobin A1C test that Susan was talking about is a simple finger stick. It's very inexpensive. The kit is like $10. That should be done, I believe, on anyone who shows signs of inflammation in the mouth. One of our colleagues, Susan Maples, ran a study in her office in near Detroit in Michigan, near Lansing. And she took 500 patients and did the hemoglobin A1C test on them and found that over 20% were positive for elevated blood sugar levels, representing either pre-diabetes or diabetes. So there's a lot of that out there that's undiagnosed. So nutrition and diet is a huge part of oral health, as well as controlling inflammation. All these refined foods that we're eating, et cetera, are just feeding the fire of inflammation in the cells. So that's a big part of that. Dr. Joel Furman, an MD in Philadelphia, I believe, wrote a book called The End of Diabetes. And he stated in his work of over 20 years with diabetics, thousands of them, that they've been able to reverse diabetes type 2 in over 90% of their patients without medications through changing their lifestyle, primarily through dietary changes to an anti-inflammatory diet, along with smoking cessation, along with stress management, along with proactively exercising, physical activity, and good sleep quality. So those are the lifestyle factors that can quickly turn around inflammation systemically and orally.
That's great. I appreciate that. And there's other areas where dentists can really take a front line, again, as the gatekeepers to identifying systemic problems in the body. Just from conversations with you in the past, some of them are cancer testing. I think you've talked a little bit about that. And then even from x-rays, and I think Dr. Estep, you've mentioned this in the past. Can you talk a little bit about that, maybe minute, 90 seconds?
Sure. What you're looking at right now is what we call a panoramic x-ray. It's an x-ray that we just typically take about every 3 years on patients so that we can get a general idea of the jaw joints, the teeth, the roots, the bone quality. But inside of these radiographs, if we look where the carotid arteries come up, sometimes we'll see white areas, which are called opacities in the, you know, in the radiograph. And if we see those opacities in the carotid artery areas, there's a chance that we're actually looking at atherosclerosis or a calcified or hardening artery. So when I see this in a panoramic x-ray, it certainly shifts our conversation from teeth to health. And if that person has a GP or already has a cardiologist, that's going to lead me to share this image with their providers. Certainly if they don't already have a GP or a cardiologist, that's going to change the tone of our conversation of, okay, we probably ought to connect you with a medical provider, a specialist, so that they can run some tests and see if what I'm seeing here. Also, you know, that might change if they're going to have a calcium score that year from their cardiologist. So the things that we can detect in some of this imaging is certainly significant to their overall health.
That's great. I appreciate that. You touched a little bit on revenue and how organizations can drive revenue from delivering these services. We're in business, in dentistry. It's important to make money from the services that we provide. Can you talk a little bit about some of the things? I know that Dr. Witt, you talked obviously about the saliva test and that uncovering some periodontal concerns that might lead to periodontal scaling, curettage, et cetera. Can you address that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely, Carlos. This is a gold mine for a healthy practice, and it's a gold mine for healthy patients. So what we're doing is adding services that are proven to be therapeutic, that can be long-term services that the patient can take advantage of for many years to come. And so let's take a patient with just mild periodontitis. So they've got inflammation of the gums, a little bit of pocketing, maybe early bone loss. We're going to be doing the salivary testing followed up by working with root planing and curettage. They'll be using an ultrasonic toothbrush. They'll be using a water flosser. But we'll also most likely be using trays that will carry medicaments. The service of that alone can be in the range of $700 to $800 of production for the practice, but it's something that is an at-home therapy that's much needed. We've done the math, and on a patient with mild periodontitis, using all the adjunct services that we're engaged in now, the production is well over $1,700 after expenses, meaning materials for those cases. So you can do the math and see that if you're doing one case a day where you have a diagnosis through salivary testing and through clinical study of mild to moderate periodontitis, which there's more than one a day in every practice of those types of patients, there can be a tremendous revenue right there. Now, that's just one thing. We are involved very much in evaluating and managing airway problems. We often will get into Invisalign cases and expanding the arches, as you mentioned. Some dentists are doing tongue tie release surgeries that you can be qualified to do. So that's another area. And Susan, add other things that I'm not mentioning.
Well, those are the two big ones, but certainly in the airway piece in children and adults, you know, expanding those arches plays a big role in this. And you spoke to those, the trays that we use in our practice for treating periodontal disease. There are a lot of new and innovative treatments coming out, like we talked about before, rather than sending to the periodontist where they used to just cut the top of the pockets off of the gums so that the pockets could be less. And, you know, I think that if patients are starting to listen to, okay, do I want to go have my gums amputated or do I want to have a scaling and curettage followed by some trays for medicaments and not just regain the health of my gums, but also maintain the aesthetics of my teeth and smile. These are places where referrals out to specialists go way down. And, you know, again, patients' acceptance goes way up.
And this is, I think the key thing is these are things that the patients need. These are not things that you're trying to sell them to drive revenue. You're really trying to do what's best for the patient. And in turn, you're getting paid for the services that you're provided. You're not trying to sell them scooters or things that they don't need. This is
right.
Specifically to address the needs that they have and then to identify if there's any underlying conditions that would benefit from the care.
You know, and imagine if that treatment now pairs with they have a drop, they go to their physician and their blood pressure has gone down and the physician starts removing medications that they're on because their oral health has improved and the patient can recognize that you played a role in that. Again, they're not going to leave you and they're going to trust your advice when it comes to necessary treatment in the future.
And one thing that you do that I think is spectacular, I think you both do this, I've heard you talk about it probably because we've had more conversations, is the way that you collaborate with other systemic health professionals. I think you meet regularly to discuss cases. Can you talk a little bit about that and even what that's meant to you to be part of that team as well?
Actually, I'm going to toss that to you, Whit, because I know that you're actively involved in creating that almost a platform, you know, a design, a framework for all of us to have similar collaborative teams.
Sure. Well, you quickly begin to see the connections between allergies and dentistry between sleep physicians and dentistry, between ENTs and dentistry, between gastroenterologists when we start talking about gastric reflux, which is one cause of esophageal cancer, which is the fastest growing cancer in the world. And we see the effects of it through the erosion on the teeth. We will probably be the first ones to pick that up. So our relationship with gastroenterologists, our relationships with integrative physicians, our relationships with physical therapists and oral myofunctional therapists, and the list goes on and on. The key there is that we're developing critical connections with each other, and there's a lot of referrals going back and forth. Cardiologists that are sending patients to our office to address the oral connection to systemic inflammation before they will, you know, clear the patient as being under control. And so we become a constant referral source for specific specialties in medicine and vice versa. And it's so exciting. My new mantra is, on a great day, we save a smile. On an amazing day, we save a life. And to have patients coming in saying, you know, you diagnosed my type 2 diabetes when no one else knew it was there. You diagnosed my sleep apnea when no one else knew it was there. I've been going to my physicians. I've been going to specialty referrals. I've been looking all over the city for help and nobody could help me. And I went to my dentist and found the answers.
You told me before that many patients go to a dentist that don't go to any physician.
So as a general rule, patients will go to the dentist one or two times a year, and the vast majority of them don't go get a physical every year. They go to the doctor when something's wrong, but lucky for us, it's in our culture and our routine to see the dentist once or twice a year just to get a cleaning. And so because of that, we have an audience who is regularly walking through our doors and regularly showing us what's in our zip code and not regularly going to the doctor unless they have a symptom.
Which is interesting. The dentists that are coming to you because they're trying to be better, have better health, and they don't, maybe they're young or maybe nothing hurts, so they don't have a physical and they don't go over there not realizing that something is wrong. So I appreciate both of you being on here. This has been extremely important conversation, not only because of the pandemic. I think for me in QSI, with what I said about being in the Navy, what we do is so important. I talk about having the right tool for the right job. You don't want a hammer to drive a screw in. And I think for QSI Dental Web, we do your checklist, that customized checklist, it can be customized electronically. They can fill it out online. It could go into discrete data fields inside of the software so that you can trigger it and put alerts in the system every time that they come in. You can create smart notes. So anything that you identify that the patient has is part of your clinical notes, and it's a very easy process to do. And of course, on any of the procedures that can be billed to medical, we do medical cross-coding. So for me and for QSI Dental, it is really, really important to have this conversation. It is something that we believe it's critical for dentistry, not only now, but I think it's going to be, you know, to quote Dr. Wilkerson, it is going to be a shift in the dental industry or oral health industry. I don't know if we've run over for Q&A, but Gabby, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for that fantastic presentation. We do have a couple minutes to squeeze a few questions in. So I see a question here that an audience member asked was, where can dentists go to find more information on diagnosing and treating systematic conditions?
Well, I think both of us started through the academy we mentioned, which is the American Academy for Oral Systemic Health. That's been a tremendous resource to the dental and medical profession. So I would direct you to their website as a good starting point. There's a lot of courses that are out there covering many of the topics that we've talked about. And many of those resources are connected with this group AOSH. And so I would recommend you connect with them. There's another academy called the American Academy for Physiologic Medicine and Dentistry, AAPMD. And their focus is primarily on airway disorders and breathing disorders and sleep. So that would be a good group to connect with specifically for that topic.
Thank you.
Another audience member asked, how can oral health organizations position themselves to be stronger in the next stage of the pandemic?
That's a great question.
Well, I certainly think it's, you know, just having that conversation, knowing that patients are walking in and they're watching the news and they are, you know, we're all afraid of this COVID-19, the current one, and of catching it and what our outcomes might be. So knowing that our audience as they walk in is all ears for what can they do to protect themselves from poor outcomes, knowing that they're in the hands of an oral health provider who has, you know, the ability to educate about comorbidities. Like we said, just a few days ago, we just found out that gum disease is a comorbidity, so that just the simple conversation can start there.
There's really two subjects that I think we all should be aware of and informed about. One is inflammation, the other is your immune system. And so those two are kind of in opposition to each other. If you're high in inflammation, your immune system's going to be compromised. If you're low in inflammation, then your immune system is going to be bolstered up or not challenged inappropriately, you know, all the time by the things that don't need to be there. And so I think having that conversation where people are aware of is what I'm doing, how I'm living, promoting my healthy immune system, or is it breaking it down because of inflammation that's being caused by my lifestyle? And of course, going to a good physician and getting blood work and understanding any deficiencies that may be there, weaknesses that may be naturally present, like vitamin D for almost all of us, because we're not out in the sunlight much. And that's critical for healing of all tissues throughout the body. Just as one example, you know, you should know what your vitamin D levels are. You should go get a physical, get blood work, and look at these different known factors of inflammation, these markers, and see where they are.
So as a fan of the dental community, as a fan of dentistry, not as a professional, maybe it won't happen by the next phase, but if we do get another pandemic, my desire is for the medical community and for the government making the rules and passing the laws to understand that the dental health professionals are health professionals and they can be part of the problem. Additionally, that they can stave off other diseases and conditions that can make that whatever pandemic is the next one, can make that worse in a human being. Because it is sad when different states are treating dental professionals like tattoo parlors, like hair salons. That is just so far from what the dental community is.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think the responsibility we have to take is to learn what we need to know in order to be able to step up to the plate and really do our job well. And so we don't want dental professionals to ever think of themselves as stepchildren to real doctors, because they're not. And,
thank you.
That's such a good point, and that is so relevant right now. We have time for one last question. And this audience member wants to know, will I be able to bill medical insurance through my practice management software?
So I'll take one quick question and then I'm going to hand over just for the specifics. But the first thing is, it's going to depend on your practice management software. Some dental practice management softwares do, like QSI Dental Web, some don't. So that would be the first phase. But if you can bill any of these procedures through medical, then I think that would be a question for Dr. Estep and Dr. Wilkerson.
So right now, there's not a lot of cross billing. There certainly are a lot of courses available for really sort of specializing somebody on your team to learn more about medical billing directly through the dental software. I think Carlos is right that it really depends on the software. But certainly, as we talk about bridging the gap between oral health or oral medicine and medicine, that insurance gap should follow as we start to bridge this gap and start to collaborate in teams of healthcare providers for the benefit of our patient.
Well, thank you all so much. That is all the time we have. today, but I want to thank Dr. Estep, Dr. Wilkerson, and Carlos for your time, thoughtfulness, and insights today. I also want to thank QSI Dental for sponsoring today's workshop.